Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Rebecca, and I will be your host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Nobel Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Institute offers paid internships for students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Institute also offers classes, our nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door to our office or online at hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is Who Won and Why? I will now turn the time over to Doug Foxley, who is an adjunct professor with the University of Utah's Political Science Department, attorney at law, and a partner at Foxley and Pignanelli, and a nationally recognized political consultant. Doug will be our moderator for today's forum. Doug?
Thank you very much, Rebecca. It's an honor to be here today. The University of Utah has such a great and rich tradition of basically being at the forefront of what's going on not only nationally but in Utah history. And we're so lucky today to have Dr. Dan Jones with us. Dan has been a very popular professor here. Many of you have had him as a professor. Dan studied under Dr. Frank Jonas here at the University of Utah, who wrote one of the great books on politics in the American West. And Dan and many others, basically as part of their master's and doctoral dissertations, wrote up various histories of political elections and campaigns in Utah. And in some ways, neither Frank nor LeVar nor I are really worthy to sit here with Dr. Jones, and we probably really should turn the time over to Dr. Dan, and I'll listen to Dan. Now, I have to tell you, guys, last night was one of those amazing nights for me. Since 1982, I, like every other political junkie, have tuned on to KSL Channel 5 to watch either Dick Norris or Dick Lindsay go to Dan to tell us who is going to win. Guess what? Instead of having Dan, who did they have? They had LeVar, and they had Frank. Now, Frank, I don't know, but I'm going to get you some Adderall the next time you do this. LeVar, you're kind of like me. You got a great face for radio, but, you know, TV career, I don't know. And next time you do it, LeVar, I'm going to get you some five-hour energy pills, okay? Of course, I'm not worthy here to be with LeVar today because, you know, I am not one of LeVar's Republican insiders, okay? Frank, are you one of the, you know, LeVar's insiders on Utah policy?
Is that the poll thing? Yeah, I'm actually.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, then you are enlightened. But anyway, let's start out with Dr. Dan Jones. And by the way, if you have not read Doug Robinson's column in the Deseret Morning News, well, no longer Deseret Morning News, the Deseret News on Monday about Dan and Dan's reflections on polling. But let's start with Dan. Dan, kind of give us your reflections on this election, would you please? Then we'll go to Frank and LeVar.
Well, I like to look at the national picture. I feel it was one of the longest elections that I've ever been through. I feel what really happened to Mitt Romney was that he tried to appease the Tea Party, and so he moved to the right, and so far to the right, he couldn't come back far enough to be able to get the mainstream voter. I believe that in Utah, of course, but see, he didn't get out of the 60 percentile, and I'm sorry, he got 73% in Utah, but he didn't lead the ticket. Jason Chaffetz did, but Mr. Romney had coattails, and many people thought that it would be enough to bring in Mia Love, and I'll never forget that election. I don't think outside groups have a right to come in and tell Utahns how to vote for Congress. I don't. And I think they were defeated themselves with those negative ads. And so many people told us in our polling how tired they were of all the negative ads. I taught my students they don't work, but maybe I'm wrong. But there's a new term that really, really came out in the election called the ground war. And what I really found is that I told Mr. Matheson, you're going to have to get over 55% in Salt Lake County, or you're not going to do it, because you got to offset Utah County, Juab County, and San Pete. And I was right. They really came in Republican. There's something wrong in Utah County, though. The number of voters that should have come voted didn't. And their lines were super long, and people went home. They need to look at that. And it was such a close election. But where Mr. Matheson won was in Salt Lake. You see, Salt Lake is 85% of the 4th Congressional District. And what really happened for Mr. Matheson is the women came back home. They came back from Mia Love back to him. And he barely won, but it was a very, very difficult district to win. And so I thought that was a major achievement. I didn't talk to anybody who wasn't going to vote for Mr. Crockett. But, I mean, they were going to vote for Crockett in my polling, but everyone I talked to was voting for Ben McAdams, which took three classes from me here. But boy, I would have to give him the award for the outstanding campaign. And by bringing both parties together, see, he couldn't win it just with the Democrats in Salt Lake County. He had to draw from the independents, but a lot of the independents are former Democrats. And he had to draw from them, but he also drew some Republicans, 19%. So he really, really did a good job. Now, I saw him ahead at 3%, and on my most likely to vote, 6%. But I didn't see him winning 55-45. And I didn't. I also had Mia Love ahead. I need to say that. But that was within air, that how it turned out in that particular race. The other races weren't hard to call. They weren't. And there were some bright spots for the Democratic Party, and the Republicans kept their hegemony. Most people will continue to say that Utah is a one-party state, but not as much as it could have been.
Okay, now let's follow up on just a couple of quick things, if I may here. Matheson, according to what I pulled off today off the Salt Lake County election page, got 52.8% of the vote. And Dan, I also noted in the off of the Salt Lake County election page, this was a surprising statistic to me, that 50% of all those who cast a ballot, who voted straight ticket, were Republicans, 48% were Democrats. So while we're on the Matheson race, let's talk to our distinguished panelist, Mr. Frank Pignanelli, who is very close to Jim Matheson. Most people thought Jim was dead, Frank. Yeah. I'm going to ask you what you attribute his victory to, and then I'm going to ask LeVar what he really attributes Mia's loss to, and then yeah. I've got an idea or two here. So, Frank, why don't you take a minute and talk about Jim Matheson. And by the way, I have to say, just in my opinion, Jim Matheson ranks up there with his father. His father in 1980 withstood the Reagan landslide and was reelected as governor over Tom Wright's father, Bob Wright. And for Jim Matheson to withstand this landslide is pretty amazing. And as Dan will tell you, because we were the only guys there, but in 1896, we both voted for William Jennings Bryan, who got 83% of the vote, because we wanted some of that free silver, okay? But anyway, okay, so Frank, then LeVar.
Well, a couple of things. Matheson is a phenomenal campaigner.
And I mean, my own daughter was out there every day. He recruited a lot of great people out there every day. And they were just hitting door after door after door in the last several weeks, making sure that their supporters were getting out there. The second thing is, I believe, and this is so crucial in politics, Matheson defined who he had, and he's done this every campaign. He defined who he is. You know who Matheson is. And he defined it not only as he a Utah type of Democrat, but also it irritated some people, but he went out there and he said, I didn't support Obamacare, I didn't do this or this, but this is who I am. So people knew who he was. Mia Love, while she was saying, you know, Mitt loves me and that type of thing, she didn't define herself as much, whereas Matheson did. So Matheson did what was important, which was the ground war, which was secondly defining himself, but also at the end of the day, what he did is he made sure that all the different constituencies, the women and others inside the district, he reached out to them. He ran a phenomenal campaign. And any Democrat who complains about Jim Matheson in the future, saying he's not a real Democrat, you have now entered the clueless category. The Utah Democrats cannot do well unless they follow that Matheson-McAdams model. That's the way it is. Otherwise, they're destined for oblivion. And that's one of the lessons.
So, LeVar, were you surprised that Mia lost? Or?
Yes, I was surprised, along with Frank and the pollsters, the National Republicans, the National Democrats. Most people thought that With Romney's coattails, with the national money that came into Utah in the past, many Republican opponents of Matheson have been underfunded. Mia Love had plenty of money. Utah's obviously a very strong Republican state. So this was a big surprise. There's no question about it. The Romney coattails were not as long as many of us thought they would be. And it did come down, but both candidates were well-funded. Both candidates, I think, got their messages out. Mia Love did run on a conservative platform. I think it did come down just to the basic blocking and tackling of political campaigns. And so those of you who are in campaign management classes need to pay attention to that, because you can have a good candidate who doesn't run a very good campaign, and they will still lose. So it comes down to targeting, it comes down to messaging, it comes down to deciding who your voters are and then getting them out to vote. And Jim Matheson has been doing this now for six terms, and he knows how to do it. And Mia Love is younger and more inexperienced, although she did bring, at the end, some good campaign management to her team. But he knew how to do it, and then across the board, the Romney coattails were not as long as people expected. So Matheson has now endured two very close races where he probably should have lost. The other one was in 2010 with the Tea Party uprising, and Democrats lost all over the country. It was a big, big year for Republicans, but he managed to survive that as well. So he has demonstrated how resilient he is. And luckily, he's just kind of a moderate Republican anyway, and votes like a Republican should a lot of the time.
Okay, so LeVar, let me ask you a couple of questions, if I may. It's just follow up here. Did Mia Love, who most people thought she would be in a primary, but she won the convention outright, which surprised a lot of people. But after she won, she tacked way, way, way to the right. She adopted the Cato Institute budget, which basically then gave a whole bunch of fodder to Congressman Matheson to attack her on things like student loans, things that you guys care about. Was that a mistake that she went as far right as she did?
She did. She went to the right mostly before the convention, because she was competing against a lot of very far-right Republicans, and so she did feel like she needed to go to the right, and she did adopt some of those more extreme positions, which she then had to downplay. So, yes, in retrospect, that was a mistake. Same thing happened to Mitt Romney, where he had to run to the right in order to win the nomination, and then that hurt him in the general election. But Mia Love is actually a pretty mainstream person. She's not far right ideologically. She's a small town mayor. She's pretty pragmatic. But certainly the positions that she took that were far right did end up hurting her. You know, Utah, interestingly, has gone through this playing footsie with the Tea Party, as the rest of the country did as well. And this election, we saw Utah kind of get back to normal, both in the party caucus attendance that tended to be more moderate to start this election out, and then throughout the race. So our infatuation with the Tea Party, with the far right, has kind of run its course, and now we're really kind of back to normal. This was a status quo election nationally and also in Utah. We're right where we started.
Okay, let me ask you a couple of questions, follow-up questions. So Matheson won by a little over 2,800 votes. You know, we'll be interesting to see once other votes come in. But the Libertarian got 5,690 votes. Did the Libertarian cost Mia Love the election? Frank, yes, no?
Yes.
Dan?
I agree. Yeah, I did.
LeVar?
Well, some of the Libertarians would have found some other place to go or not voted. I mean, you do have the extremes of both parties, and in Utah, because we're a conservative state, they're more extremists on the far right, and they don't like any of the mainstream candidates, and so they'll vote for someone that's more extreme, or they won't vote at all. But had those people voted Republican, then Love would have won. I don't know if enough would have voted Republican if they didn't have their own candidate.
So yesterday was a great day. One of the things that people talk about in an election is how the weather is going to affect turnout. I mean, yesterday I played golf in golf shorts, okay? Never done that. 1984, Norm Bangert and I were going to play golf, and I'll tell you, it was a snowstorm. So yesterday was a pretty amazing day. But let me tell you, the good news is the 2012 race is over. The bad news is the 2016 race is on. And somewhere along today, in our discussion today, one of the things I thought was interesting in talking with Republicans last night is one of the most frequently asked questions was, is Governor Herbert going to run again? So I think it would be interesting. I mean, most people thought Governor Herbert would get over 70% of the vote. He ended up with 68% of the vote. So, LeVar, do you think Governor Herbert runs 4 years from now?
I don't know. I can take a guess. I think it will depend on how well he does, whether he's still interested and energized by politics. It will depend on how things go in 2014. We do have that election before 2016. I also don't think that he will say, because he doesn't want to become immediately a lame duck governor and have all the Republicans posturing to run for governor. So I think he will hold his cards close to his vest for a couple of years at least and then decide. If I just had to absolutely guess, I would say no.
Dan, any thoughts on that, or Frank, or
yeah,
way on that?
Point, I think there's a good chance that Gary Herbert will run again. But I need to point something out about, look what happened in 2010. What happened to Senator Bennett? Why didn't that happen to Hatch? I'm going to embarrass him, but part of it was in December of that year, I met with Senator Hatch. And I said, if you're really going to win, you better get Doug Foxley. And what they did is reorganize the whole caucus system. And you know, a lot of you gripe about the money that Hatch spent, but it took money. But that whole caucus system was different. Now, Hatch didn't get to 60%, but he darn near did. But he didn't get defeated at the convention like Bennett did, because he had a whole new set of delegates. And so you also have to give a lot of credit to Dave Hansen. He ran a marvelous campaign. And if you said to me 2 years ago that Hatch would get 65% of the vote, that's unbelievable with how long he's been in and the role of the Tea Party. The Tea Party was out to get him, but they edged him out at the convention, but it took a lot of money and a lot of work. Hatch won the election at the convention, and then he beat Mr. Lillenquist in a primary going away. So that's something that hasn't come out. But it was really designed by Doug Foxley and Dave Hansen and
you have to give
Bob Henry.
You have to give a lot of credit to the LDS Church. Because
I'm not in that position to be able to give credit to
you. I will tell you one thing. Unprecedented, Orrin Hatch elected to a seventh term. And I'll tell you, the guy is amazing, okay? So, LeVar, I know you've been actively involved in the issue dealing with the caucus system and what may or may not happen.
Yeah.
Just quickly, do you think that the current caucus system that we have, do you think that will be in place 4 years from now or even 2 years from now?
I think it will be in place, but I would like to see a parallel track for people to be able to get onto the primary ballot outside of the caucus system. And I do think there's some support for that. I don't know if the legislature would pass legislation to make that happen because they are all products of that system, but it may take a ballot initiative by citizens, so I would like to see that happen. Senator Hatch will be 84 years old when his term ends, and he does have to stay awake in committee meetings, but
I think.
But he will be able to compose music.
He is Orrin is energized, and guess what? He now gets to play Dr. No, a great place to go. Frank, do you think that the caucus system will change in the near future?
I don't, for a couple reasons. One is that coming in 2014 will be one of those years where there's no statewide race. It's going to be all just congressional races. So there won't be an incentive either by the church or by a candidate to change the caucus
system. And isn't it always nice when the Irish-Italian Catholic talks about the church? He's not talking about the Catholic Church. So anyway.
When in Rome, do as the Romans do.
But describe what the church did, because some people may not understand.
What happened is that, and I actually think that part of the credit does go to the Orrin Hatch campaign, is they started moving to try to moderate the caucus system by having moderates attend the precinct caucuses of the Republican Party, so that way they elected delegates who are obviously supportive of Orrin Hatch, but were not Tea Party delegates. But at the same time, you had was this real concern by the LDS Church because there was this anti-immigration sentiment out there. You had the legislature that legislators were pushing for this legislation that really was really inflammatory rhetoric against immigrants, especially undocumented immigrants. And half the LDS Church membership are Hispanics. So there was a real concern. We cannot have the governing party of the state of Utah take an inflammatory tone towards Hispanics. It was very practical. And there was a compassionate tone to it. It was a very practical measure by the LDS Church, which is we have got to make sure that there's moderate voices inside the delegates who elect people who take a moderate stance on immigration. So they were driven by that. And that, they, as you know, on several Sundays in a row, they said, we're asking you to participate in the caucus of your choice, whether it be Republican or Democrat. But they wanted to make sure a number of people showed up, so it just wasn't this fringe group that usually dominate the caucus system. So they flooded it and really moderated. It moderated for the Republicans, which helped Hatch, which helped Herbert, and which helped others, but also moderated for the Democrats. Ben McAdams may not have been able to succeed against Ross Romero, nor Scott Howell against Pete Ashdown, if there not had been a moderating influence by this infusion of LDS political activists.
Very, very interesting. So we've talked about people that run really good campaigns, Jim Matheson. We've talked about Ben McAdams. We've talked about Orrin Hatch. We've talked about a little bit about Governor Herbert. Who do you think, who do you think LeVar and, their students, and I think your advice and counsel about elections do matter, and that's one of the big takeaways that I would take away from this election, is campaigns do matter. And personally, I think if Dave Hansen had been running the Mia Love race for the last 3 months, she may have won. Don't know, but you never know. But who do you think ran the worst campaign in Utah this cycle? LeVar, Frank?
Well, I don't want to be mean. A campaign requires money. It requires a really good organization, someone who really knows what they're doing to organize and do the grassroots and targeting and so forth. And I do think that the Crockett campaign was deficient in many of those areas. Allowing Ben McAdams not just to win, I think a lot of people thought he would win narrowly, but he ended up winning big, and he ran a very good campaign. He was better funded. He better organized. Crockett did not have enough money to even run a media, a radio or television, and didn't have the organization throughout the county, didn't do targeting and get out the vote very well. And so that was an example of a campaign that wasn't really run very well.
Frank?
Well, I mean, obviously the Crockett campaign had issues. I would also say that it's always tough to run against Gary Herbert, who's very popular. And I think Peter Cook tried on the balance, but the problem with balance is a non-issue. Utahns may say they may tell Dan Jones in the poll they want balance, but they don't vote for balance. And that you cannot, it's a loser issue for Democrats. You will never win saying, let's bring more balance into state government, because they want more. They want a candidate, Republican or Democrat, to state the plan or state the ideology. So I would say running on balance was a loser issue. And I got to be honest, in the U.S. Senate race, you know, saying that someone's too old to serve when the prophet of the LDS Church is 85 years old, that's not a great issue either.
So that, you know, Orrin may die in office, that probably isn't going to work?
Ageism is just like racism. And, you know, that this doesn't work. And so I would say those strategies just never take off, because that's really not what drives people to the polls.
So if I could, panel, some interesting things happened in the election. For the first time in decades, there will not be a Democratic legislator outside of Salt Lake County.
Doug, I'd even say maybe what's the statehood?
Actually, I've gone back, and there are two instances where there were zero Democrats in the Utah House of Representatives. One was 1896, the other was 1898. And there were two instances where there were zero Republicans in the House. And that was, of course, in 1916 and 1918, okay? And Dan and I are the only ones that remember those. And, oh, those were very fun elections, I might add. So, I think another interesting factoid. When you think of Democratic counties, you think of Carbon County being a Democratic county. Carbon County elected another Republican county commissioner. For the first time ever, Carbon County is controlled by Republicans. Mm-hmm. So my question to you guys is, you see Salt Lake County, Romney gets 58% of the vote in Salt Lake County. But there were only two other Democratic county commissioners elected, one in Rich County, Mr. Weston. I think they forgot to get the memo that they, you know, that they was supposed to be a Republican, and the other one was of course down in Miller County, and it was an issue really of a county commissioner who was Democrat who ran saying that he would give his salary back. But do you see the Democratic Party coming back quickly outside of Salt Lake County in the near future? I'd like for all three panelists to weigh in on that issue.
I'd like to address that. He mentioned the 1916, but go look at the legislature during the Depression. It was so heavy Democratic. It was as Democratic as it is Republican now, even more so. And it goes in cycles. I really think there was a light in the tunnel for the Democrats in this election. See, Salt Lake County is 39% of the population of the state. But what you really have the legislature is all of Utah against Salt Lake County. But that's where your Democrats have some clout. And they didn't take out Carol Spackman Moss. They didn't take out Patrice Arendt and others. So I really look for this as a chance for the Democrats to start to rebuild, but I think you're saying it right. It can't just be Salt Lake County. But Salt Lake County is very formidable as it is right now, but it can't win without some of the help from the other counties.
I've actually got to just make a quick correction note. Two times there were no Republican Utah state senators in 1896, 1918, and two times there were no Democratic senators, 1906 and 1908. In 1935, there were only four Republican members of the House of Representatives. So this thing changes, but that of course was, you know, during the, you know, when you really look at it, I mean, it was really things were going on nationally. I mean, it was William Jennings Bryan, then you had Woodrow Wilson. Of course, then you had FDR. Then you had Ronald Reagan. So, Frank, your thoughts?
Well, again, I would just say the Matheson again pointed out where our path lies for Democrats, and I believe you don't become Republicans. What you do is, but you provide. I disagreed with the National Party on this. I agreed with them here, and lay out a messaging, and that's what the Democrats are going to have to do. I think there's an opportunity for the Democratic legislators to participate because the state's going to make some decisions on health care reform. And if they just can take, we're going to defend Obamacare, that's a loser for them. If they say, no, we're going to participate with Republicans and come up with a health care reform that works, that's something they can piggyback in other races. And so there's a decision they're going to have to make there. I also think there's opportunities for the Democrats to reach out to the Hispanic population and others. I mean, they do it now, but even do it more because that's going to be the problem for the Republicans. But to build those type of coalitions, there are some opportunities there. But also, the Democrats need to figure out a way to be able to talk to small business people in the state of Utah, and because that's where the Republicans are winning big is in the jobs category. There's opportunities there, but they just can't take the progressive route that exists in Salt Lake City. They will not get out. They will not have any gains outside of the city if they take that route.
So, Frank, how troubling is it to you that a Neil Hendrickson, a union guy, loses? You have basically Christine Watkins, a union person from, Carbon County, on and on. Is Karen Main really the last of the old breed pro-jobs, pro-union Democrat? I mean, is that part of the Democratic Party died off?
Well, the influence is what's happening is there's more and more litmus tests that are occurring inside the Democratic primaries, which knocked off Neil Hendrickson, and they're silly litmus tests. What the litmus test should be an approach towards obviously promoting economic equality and things like that, not these silly litmus tests. And that's what happened. Neil Hendrickson would have probably won that race. And so that's what they need to be revisiting on for the Democrats. But, yeah, Karen Main may be the last labor connection that the Democratic caucus has up at the Capitol.
Laura, your thoughts?
When I first started covering politics as a journalist back in the mid-70s, the Democrats were really pretty strong. Cal Rampton was the governor, and the Democrats held a lot of seats in the legislature. And you could reliably predict that Ogden area, Weber County, was going to be Democratic, Tooele County was going to be Democratic, Carbon County. And those advantages that the Democrats had are now gone, and all of those areas are more and more Republican. Tooele County, of course, has become more of a bedroom community. And so forth to Salt Lake County. So I don't see that turning around anytime soon. I do think that the Democratic support is going to be concentrated, obviously, in Salt Lake City, which is very liberal. It's as liberal as about any city in the country. And then the Salt Lake County suburbs tend to be swing. They're more mainstream. And then you get out in the more rural areas, and it tends to be more Republican. And I don't see that changing a lot. Interestingly, even though the Republicans picked up a few seats in the legislature, and you would think, well, then our legislature is going to be more conservative, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think that this legislature may be more mainstream, a little more moderate than any that we have had for a number of years. So despite the Republican pickups, I think we may have a more mainstream legislature.
If you take a look at the numbers, 61 Republicans in the House, 14 Democrats. The last time that the Democrats' numbers got that low was in 1984, during the Reagan landslide. And the numbers in the House, 24 Republicans, 5 Democrats. The last time that happened was in 1982. In fact, in 1984, the Democrats actually picked up one seat, to go to, to 23-6.
And in 1986, the Democrats doubled their numbers in the House and close to it in the Senate. Because
Of course, that's like talking about the tallest building in Erda, but we'll go on.
Yeah, we got over one-third so we could filibuster, as Doug well knows. And what happened is the Republicans overreached. They just said incredible things, and we were able to campaign and say, look at those guys. They are just out of touch. And then 1986, the Democrats picked up a member of Congress. In 1988, they further solidified their gains with more legislators in the Attorney General's office. So it will be interesting to see what 2014 offers the Democrats. I do believe that the leaders in the state legislature, the Republican leaders, are probably a little more savvy and sophisticated. They're going to try to hold down the rhetoric of their large caucuses, knowing that if they don't, it could lead to gains for Democrats in 2014 and 2016.
So, LeVar, do you see a pathway for the Democrats to come back quickly in Utah?
No. I do think the I would if the Republicans go too far right, if the Tea Party had prevailed. But I think we've kind of gotten past that. Again, this big caucus turnout in the spring and a movement toward more moderation in the Republican Party and the candidates. And there's a lot of new Republican legislators that are really pretty mainstream. They're ideologically, they're not far right, they're more practical. And so as long as the Republicans do that and they focus on problem solving and getting and not on harsh ideology, I think the Republicans can stay strong. I don't see a Democrat being able to win statewide, including Jim Matheson, for a number of years. I think if Matheson tried to run for governor, Utah County, Davis County, the rural areas of the state are just really, really hard for a Democrat. So I don't see the Democrats coming back anytime soon.
A few years ago, the Hinckley Institute sponsored an author, a gentleman by the name of Leo Kotkin, who wrote a book called Tribes. And in this book, he basically identified what he perceived to be an emerging tribe, which were Mormons. It's interesting to me that how much money the Mormon tribe gave to Mitt Romney. And I think probably last night there were probably more disappointed people who thought they were going to be ambassadors who will not be, okay? And the good news for the Hinckley Institute is the most quoted man in Utah, Mr. Kirk Jowers, will still be here. So that's good for everybody. But tell me, were you surprised, LeVar, having covered as many elections as you have, how much money Mitt Romney was really able to raise in Utah?
Yeah, and I don't know the final numbers, but it was a lot. It's more than anyone has ever pulled out of Utah. There's no question about that.
LeVar, let me just interrupt. I don't think we'll ever know because I think there was a lot of money that was given to, 528s and others. And so I think that, the 8 million number we've heard, I think that's probably really a very small number.
Yeah, not just Utah Mormons, but Mormons all over the country. So there's no question about that. He had a lot of support, obviously, in the church, and there are a lot of wealthy Mormons around, and so he did pull a lot of money. Also, but also pulled big money from other wealthy business people, and not just Mormons.
So was Mitt Romney the best candidate the Republicans could field who actually ran in the year 2012?
I'm going to say no. If John Huntsman had been the nominee, they would have stayed. John Huntsman would be moving into the White House.
Dan?
Well, I think he could be very possibly correct, but when John Huntsman Jr. went with civil unions, that really hurt him with the Republican Party, especially the Republican Party in Utah. And so, but he had to broaden himself. And I really look for John Huntsman Jr. to be a major candidate in 2016. But also, I believe this next election of 2014, there's no statewide race, no senatorial or presidential.
Or as Dan says, the 12-year cycle.
And it's a good chance for the Democrats if they'll turn out. Otherwise, the turnout's going to be less than 50%. And I predicted in the 4th District it would be 80%, but it's going to be at least 75%. And we won't be the bottom state anymore. And we'll be one of the top states. But the next off year, usually the party out of power is the one who gains seats. So I challenge the Democrats, but it's going to be very, very tough, because you're not going to have anybody at the top. But I also see a real struggle for leadership of the Republican Party of the state of Utah.
LeVar, any thoughts?
I think Romney was the best candidate. It was unfortunate that he had to go too far to the right and was unable to recover from that for the general election. But of all the candidates, including Huntsman, I think he did the best and would have done the best, clearly far more far better than, aside from Huntsman, the other more far-right candidates. They would not have done as well as Romney did.
It is interesting that Obama, the incumbent, with money, had the luxury of defining Mitt Romney before Mitt Romney could define Mitt Romney.
Yeah. With the luxury, but he also had the path to do it, because Romney just, not only did you have the flip-flops, but Romney just had this inability to connect. Ronald Reagan, because I worked against Ronald Reagan both times, he had an uncanny ability to connect. It wasn't just the ideology of Ronald Reagan. His connection, he had millions of Reagan Democrats. You did not have millions of Romney Democrats. It was a very small species. And that's the problem, is Romney was a flawed candidate. Obama should have lost based upon the economics and everything else, and you had basically two candidates saying, don't vote for me because the other guy's bad. Neither one of them, let's be honest, laid out a great plan. But the problem that Romney has, he just could not connect. And I think it was very evident last night. I can't think of a worse concession speech in the history of American politics than Romney's. Basically, it was, appreciate you, bye.
No, thanks, guys.
With you, thanks, guys, you're the best, and walked off.
I think that Romney did start to connect toward the end, particularly after the first debate. I think he did a great job there. Look at the popular vote. It's almost tied. I mean, Obama won by a very, very tiny margin. So Romney did connect. Had he connected earlier, he would have done better. But I think he ended up with a good people had a good feeling about him, and I disagree that he just, you know, didn't connect at all.
So let me ask a gentleman a question, if I may. Orrin Hatch, in the year 2000, ran for president of the United States. Knew that he wouldn't win, but he wanted to pave the way for a Mike Leavitt or a John Huntsman or a Mitt Romney or others who were a Mormon to run for president. Do you think, the Democrats, there was Alf Langdon, the happy warrior. You know, it took until 1960 to have, you know, John Kennedy, who actually appointed two Mormons really to his cabinet, T.H. Bell, who was technically the commissioner, but, you know, really was treated as a cabinet secretary, and, of course, Stuart Udall. But do you think that the Republican Party, or the Democratic Party for that matter, do you think they will ever nominate another Mormon candidate for the presidency?
I said today in class that I think that's going to be very difficult for a Mormon now to get the nomination. If there is one, maybe it'll be John Huntsman Jr. But the other is that I feel that the Republican Party has really got to examine themselves nationally. And I also don't understand in this election, what in the heck was Harry Reid doing? He didn't help Romney at all. And I think Romney really lost at the Sandy storm. And when Chris Christie shook the hand of the president and said, see, we can work together. That, in my polling and so forth, Romney just stopped after that. And so, and I know about General Motors and the strikes and so forth, or the
bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy, yeah. But I really feel that closed the chance of Romney coming back, and he was coming on.
LeVar, you've watched political races for a long, long time. You've been actively involved, not only watching, but participated and worked closely with Governor Leavitt and others. In your opinion, did Romney make a mistake by sitting on the lead and not attacking President Obama on the Benghazi issue?
No. There's a lot of conservatives who think that is the case, but I disagree. I think he, in the closing days and that the last couple of debates, that he really had to, as Frank said, he needed to start to connect better with people, particularly help females and moderates be more comfortable with him. And I think had he gone on the attack, that it would have hurt that. People didn't want to see all the negativity and so forth. And I think he did a good job closing. I agree with Dan that the Hurricane Sandy hurt him and stopped his momentum. And had he, the auto bailout thing was a big issue in Ohio, Had that not been such a big problem for him, I think he could have won Ohio. So it was a couple of, you know, things. This was a very close race. There's no question about it. You look at Ohio and Florida and Virginia, how close those were, and a couple of small things. Obama had a better ground game, better turnout, and those little things, again, the nuts and bolts of campaign management really do pay off.
You know, and I think LeVar has really hit on something here. It is amazing now with research and technology how you can target just a very, very small number of counties in a couple of three swing states, and really it determines an election. And so for those of you who are in campaign management or want to get involved, it's the sophistication now is pretty amazing. Well, we've talked about Jim Matheson, and we've also talked about Ben McAdams and the role that they've played. But let's talk for a few minutes. Who do you see kind of as some of the bright new stars who are emerging in either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party? Who, if you're a young student, you weren't wanting to get involved in a campaign, and hopefully you will all run someday. But who do you see as some of the real, you know, comers in the two political parties?
Locally or nationally?
Locally. We're going to finish when Jane gives me the signal. We're going to finish on the national scene on peace. Okay.
Well, locally for Democrats, obviously, you know, got, you know, Ben McAdams is the county mayor. Does that provide him a path to go? Oftentimes, county office is a graveyard, but does that provide him a path for future office?
Who was the last person that was elected to a major political office from Salt Lake County?
Well, Mark Shurtleff was elected Attorney General, and before that was Ted Moss.
1958, yeah. Was elected to the U.S. Senate, but with 38% of the vote because you had a divided right. Republican Party.
So yep. it's a graveyard.
Gary Herbert came out of Utah County as a commissioner.
That's true. So,
but had to go the lieutenant governor route right. to get there.
Yeah. On the Republican side, I mean, there's some exciting people. Well, for the Democratic side, also, I would say Pat Jones. Pat Jones. Dan may not want to hear it or not. Pat Jones could be a very good candidate for both Congress and for state office, and she's one of the shining stars there. Really could be. Brian King on the House side, also someone that I think could maybe would launch something if she wanted to. And, of course, Patrice Aaron's been talked about doing something there also. On the Republican side, some of the great legislators that could have a shot at something is Becky Lockhart, Speaker of the House, phenomenal leader, Kurt Bramble. You may see, you know, who knows if Greg Hughes wants to do something on the Senate side again. Wayne Niederhauser may want to launch on something. He may be the Senate president. Steve Urquhart, maybe see him run for Congress at some point. You've got perhaps Stuart Adams down in Davis County. And then you've got some new people like Aaron Osman, a terrific state senator. He's someone you may want to look for. Then you've got Ken Ivory, also state legislator. There's a big bench in the Republican side here in Utah.
Yeah, but you can't leave out the name of Kirk Jowers either.
Well, let me ask you a question, and maybe you're going to say this, but I've got an envelope with a really big name in. Let me see if you've got it, LeVar.
Josh Romney.
Josh Romney, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly, I think we may see, I don't think we'll see Mitt Romney run again, but we will likely see some of his sons run, and Josh is a Utahn and may well run here. Clearly, Jason Chaffetz is an up-and-comer and will be looking at the governorship or Senate perhaps in the future. I think Chris Stewart is going to do well. I don't know that I see him as running as a statewide race anytime soon, but I think he'll be a good congressman. So the Republicans really do have a big bench in Utah.
It's interesting to me, Jake C. Miller acquired 59% of the vote in Salt Lake County. 59%, 59-36. So who are the two major politicians in Utah that really probably have a lot of work to do in the next year or two? LeVar?
Senator Mike Lee needs to do some work. We've seen some polling. I mean, he's very popular in the Tea Party, but he needs to do some work with probably approval ratings, I would say. He needs to do some work there.
LeVar?
Yeah, Lee has been very low profile, and I agree he needs to broaden his base from just the Tea Party. It's interesting. Someone like Rob Bishop, for example, is low profile, doesn't seek a lot of publicity for years and years. He wouldn't even send out a press release. But despite that low profile, he still does very well in his elections. He knows his voters well and manages to do really well. So who else really needs to? I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
But it's interesting. People come out of nowhere. Orrin Hatch, 1976, came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So we're almost coming to a close. But Dan Jones, Dr. Danny Jones, started teaching in 1957. And hopefully all of you have had Dan as a class. He is magical. He is wonderful. He is awesome. He is a dear friend. Your final thoughts on campaigns, Dan, elections, do they matter? Should these young men and women who are here, should they get involved in politics, or is it now just too dirty, sleazy, and is it too cynical? I mean, what would be your advice and counsel to this, you know, this distinguished group of young men and women who are sitting here?
Number one, get internships. Go out and get involved. The year I saw the most unenthusiasm they couldn't vote was 1968. It was the young people who got us out of Vietnam after we lost 58,000 lives. They're the ones that said, that's enough. You young people on the stalemate in Congress, you've really got to say, that's enough. And they really do listen to you. I want to say another thing. You really are the cream of the crop. You don't have any apology to come here to the U of U. And you are the best, and you can compete with anybody, anywhere, anytime. And I really feel that. And I feel it an honor that I've been here the years I have, and also at Utah State University and the high school I taught at. And so I wish you the best. And I want to thank the Hinckley Institute. Bob Hinckley would be very, very proud of what's been done here at the University of Utah and for so many of you to get involved. Thank you.
Well, Dan Jones, you are one of Utah's great institutions, and it's such an honor for me to be with you today, and also LeVar and Frank. And Mr. Hinckley did come up with a great and wonderful thing. And students who are here, hopefully you will get involved, and hopefully you will run. Because someday, I think there's nothing that we would look more kindly upon than you're getting involved and participating in the system. So with that, we will turn the time over to Rebecca, who I think is going to take a question or two.
We have just enough time for a couple of questions, maybe one from the audience. If you have a question, please take maybe a little bit of
audience. Hi, my name is Clint Williams. I'm a third-year economics student here at the U. My question to all of you, listening on the news last night, you hear a lot about the Republicans needing to broaden their base or do something a little different to improve their vote. Do you see that happening? And if you do, where do you think they'll go for those votes?
Well, again, if you look at the popular vote, it was very, very close. A few more votes here and there, as we talked about, even in some key counties, and Romney would have won. Having said that, however, the Republicans, both parties, always need to be looking at their base and broadening their base. And clearly, the Democrats did very well among Hispanics. That's a growing constituency, and some of the things that happened in the primary hurt Romney on that issue. He took some fairly strident stands on immigration, which was unfortunate. Women voted heavily for Obama, so that's another area that the Republicans need to focus on. So they do need to broaden their base. Obama needs to broaden his base among white males. That's a weakness that he has. So both parties need to do that, but there are improvements that Republicans need to make.
Your question's great, and the reason why I'm so high on Huntsman is because I do believe there is this libertarian bent amongst young Republicans, and you'll see it among some legislators across the country. And you're going to see a struggle inside the Republican Party saying, wait a minute, we don't care about the social mores. We don't care who marries who. we don't care about the stuff, we care about fiscal responsibility. You can have that battle between that group, who also wants some type of immigration reform, against the older, more traditional Republicans saying, oh, no. And the battle's going to go like, wait a minute, we lost the Senate because you guys put in the crazies like Aiken and Murdoch and people like that. We need to be able to broaden our base. So the next 4 years, you're going to see the struggle inside the Republican Party. But also, you're going to see a struggle inside the Democratic Party, too, because they are losing their traditional base of the white, middle-income voter, too. They're going to say, wait a minute, we need to be more outreach. So you're going to see a struggle inside both. But the current civil war that's going to happen inside the Republican Party will be fascinating to watch, because if the younger libertarian side prevails, they're on the path to success. But if it collapses, the Republican Party will be a minority party.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you for coming, and please join me in thanking our guests for an excellent and informative forum.